Hi, this is Fiona J.R. Tichenel, author of Out of the Pocket. Out of the Pocket is F-Bomb's Summer 2018 Book of the Month selection. F-Bomb, that's Feminist Book of the Month, brings curated, independently published novels to readers hungry for feminist science fiction and fantasy. And aren't we all? They're amazing, so go pick up your special edition of Out of the Pocket at f-bom.com. In the meantime, here's a sample of Out of the Pocket. Chapter 1. The Open Window. There was probably some terrible cosmic retribution for being this excited to go to a funeral. It wasn't that I had anything against Great Aunt Isabel. I'd never had anything at all with Great Aunt Isabel, good or bad, thanks to my mom running away or getting disowned or both when she was my age. She'd always been fuzzy on the details. I supposed if I'd managed to get myself kicked out of the kind of family that comes with a giant mansion and a trust fund fed by the biggest, oldest seafood company in Connecticut, it might not be a life choice I'd want to relive either. In any case, it seemed our bridges to the rest of the family hadn't been burned as completely to ashes as I'd been led to believe my whole life, more like singed to the point of structural unsoundness and condemned for the public safety. Because Mom and I now found ourselves cordially and solemnly invited to the memorial services for dear Great Aunt Isabel Ironwright. "Is Green Beach really a beach?" I asked. I was sitting in the back seat of Mom's ancient Chevy Corsica on the way home from school, the way I did every day she was able to pick me up, ever since something broke in the railings of the front passenger seat, making it settle at a spine-twisting angle. Mom was trying not to look at me in the rearview mirror. "I've always wanted to go to a beach." Not nearly as much as I'd always wanted to go somewhere that warranted the word green in its name, and historic as a prefix to its name, and spooky as an unofficial pre-prefix to its name in the sleaziest tourist guides. But Mom used to talk fondly about the beach, so it seemed like a better draw for her, which was the point at the moment. In spite of the fact that our invitation had come with a personalized promise that our plane tickets would be covered by Great Aunt Isabel's estate, and an only slightly more subtle promise that not another dime of that estate would be allotted to anyone who couldn't be bothered to show up, Mom had yet to agree that we were going. "It has a beach," Mom answered carefully. "A small one. Probably not nearly as nice as the ones down in San Diego." "Yeah, but we can go to this one now for free," I said. Mom had been fantasizing with me about a vacation in San Diego or Anaheim for as long as I could remember, but fantasizing was all we'd been able to do. "It's a funeral, Angie," she said, "and it wouldn't be like a regular memorial service here like they had for Professor Sykes. We wouldn't be sitting around a photo listening to a few people talk about how they feel. It would be a funeral." She drew out the word and pulled a face. "Open casket, black suits, white flowers, eulogy from some family minister who probably knew Isabel about as well as we did, and the procession and the burial and hours of drunk arguments at the wake, and then the reading of the will." The formal way she said this was supposed to make it sound boring, not like something the whole shape of our futures could hang on. "All that in one day?" I asked. "All day," she confirmed. "And then probably a more laid-back family luncheon at some god-awful trendy restaurant the next day so your grandparents can explain to you how I ruined their lives." This still sounded like more fun than staying home. Here was my chance to visit the legendary Ironwright estate, meet people I was related to who weren't Mom, and then maybe at some point over the hors d'oeuvres, or whatever was served at wakes, one of my living aunts or uncles might remark on how I was a real Ironwright after all, nothing like my mother, and offer to buy me a car and a free ride to Vassar. Well, probably not that last part, but the trip part. I'd never been outside California, never even been outside Teardrop, where everything was 30 years old and falling apart anyway. I'd never seen history. I'd never seen anything except desert and stained drywall. I would have been raring to go to Green Beach any day of the month. This month, though, after Mom's latest appearance at school, a funeral would be more than intriguing. It would be a blessed and merciful salvation. I'd been minding my own business during third period chemistry, scribbling a soon-to-be-scratched-out ode to the deliciously autumnal color of Kyle McNeil's hair in the margin of my notebook, when Mom came bursting in, wearing her Pioneer buffet apron, a still-damp dish rag draped over the crook of her arm, and grabbed me right out of my desk for a loud hug-scolding combo as if she'd thought she'd never see me again. It turned out she'd gotten an alert that I'd left town, and that was how I, and my entire chemistry class, found out that first, my mom uses Child Tracker on me, and second, to add injury to insult, Lisa Parsons had finally made good on her threat to pickpocket my phone and throw it into one of the open cargo cars of the freight trains that thundered down the tracks behind Teardrop High every couple of hours. Mom and I got into a raging fight right there in class and ended up getting sent to the principal's office together to talk things out. She eventually apologized for making a scene, to me as well as Principal Corbin, but that didn't stop said scene from downgrading my social status from joke no one thinks is funny enough to mention anymore back to gag of the month. If that wasn't incentive enough to ditch school and get the hell out of Teardrop for a week, I didn't know what was. So, after this free lunch, I leaned forward between the seats to watch Mom's face, then you and I sneak off to the beach? Ange, can't you already feel the salt breeze in your hair? I couldn't because I'd never felt one before, but I took a deep breath in as though I could, and then suddenly realized how sweltering it was getting in the car. The AC hadn't worked since I was in kindergarten. I hit the button for the window, but nothing happened. Mom, child lock. Mom pushed her button to lower my window about 7 or 8 inches, but she didn't remove the lock. Seriously, child locks? I asked. You think I'm about to grow a daredevil streak and tuck and roll at any moment? I wanted to be surprised, but I wasn't. Anyone would think I was the craziest, most rebellious, hopeless case problem child in the world by the way Mom treated me, or that she was some kind of freaky cult type, but neither of those things were true. I'd never snuck out of my room, not because there were decorative wrought iron security bars over my window, which there were, but because I liked sleep and never had anywhere worth sneaking to. I had perfect attendance, always did my homework on time, and I never got written up. At least, not when Mom wasn't barging into classrooms for me. I was an utter virgin, though that part was admittedly involuntary, and I'd never partaken of any illicit substances unless you counted special occasions when Mom shared a bottle of champagne with me. And Mom, she was the kind of person who celebrated by sharing a bottle of champagne with her 16-year-old daughter. I could curse in front of her without thinking about it. I could tell her about the boys I liked and the teachers I liked and the teachers I wanted to stab in the eye with a ballpoint pen. I told her about whatever I was reading, even though she teased me plenty for the admittedly cheesier romances that I liked. She could even summon a little enthusiasm when I'd go on about my latest favorite video game and my latest victory therein, in what I always realized after a few seconds must be gibberish to anyone who hadn't played. She never told me what or how long I could play or read or watch. She even reminded me with annoying regularity that I could have friends over to the house any time I liked, as if that were a possibility likely to come up. Basically, as long as my grades were decent, which was easy with my abundance of free time, I could do whatever I wanted, other than go out anywhere or otherwise make her wonder for even one split second exactly where I was. Or open windows, apparently. "Can't be too careful," she said, one of her favorite expressions, and it wasn't nearly as much of a joke as her tone tried to make it. "You're not leaving my sight until we can get you a new phone." "Right, new phone," I nodded. "One of the many things inheritance is good for." "Ange, you need to stop this." "Stop what?" I asked. "Thinking that something might go right for once?" "You need to stop expecting something to come along and fix everything. Sooner or later, you have to stop and figure out how to make the best of what you get." "That's what I'm trying to do," I exclaimed. "This is happening, and I'm trying to make the best of it. So maybe Aunt Isabel didn't set us up for life, but maybe she did, and if we don't go, we'll never know. And even if she just left us a grand or two, can you imagine how much that would help right now?" She could imagine. I could see it. "Mom," I settled my hands on the back of both front seats. I had to say this with care. "You work your ass off for me." "Flattery? Yes. True? Hell yes." "I get that. I mean, I didn't complain once about having to wait 2 paychecks to get a new phone. You noticed that, right?" Mom chuckled in spite of herself. "Well, now that you point it out..." "I'm not pointing it out," I said. "Just pointing out that you're not pointing it out." "Pointing out that I'm not pointing it out because you're cool enough to buy me a new phone at all, even when it takes 2 checks to save for," I said. "And you're all independent and tough and..." "And did I say independent? Because you're way ahead on the independent scale. Like, you could depend on someone probably 50 times and still be ahead on points." "Speaking of points," Mom prompted. The point is, you're good at making the best of things. Olympic gold at making the best of things. Check. But if an opportunity comes along that could make things better than that, why wouldn't you take it? She pinched the bridge of her nose and then quickly stopped so she could see the road again. The life you see on TV isn't normal, she said. Another of her old standards and another dodge of my question. The money and the magic fixes. Yeah, I know. I hit the button for my window a few more times. It produced noise without effect. But this? I kept hitting it faster. This isn't normal either, Mom. Angie, what did I ever do to make you distrust me this much? I kept my tone even, as non-whiny as possible, but didn't stop pressing the button. Nothing, said Mom. Then why? I stopped and folded my arms, staring at Mom in the mirror, waiting for her to have to glance my way. If there's a good reason why a free weekend in Green Beach would be so horrible it wouldn't even be worth finding out how much we might be getting, why can't you trust me enough to tell me? Mom sighed. I waited and watched, and right when I thought she was about to say something, the engine coughed. It lurched, coughed again, and died right there in the middle of the road, all the rest of the after-school traffic honking and swerving around us. Mom turned the key 3 times, trying to get the engine to catch again, before she put her head down on the steering wheel and laughed. "You broke it," she said, pointing at my window button. I laughed along, partly because this was all we needed right now, and partly because I thought I knew where her laughter might be leading. "Fine," she finally gasped. "We're going."